parenting advice on Talk About.
Now, Margaret Gilbert is here. Margaret, I'm not going to ask you about what you think of Ireland's draw in the World Cup, but I mean, you can.
Really excited. It's fantastic. It lifts the nation.
It does. I was going to say, you're more of a hurling woman now, aren't you?
It doesn't matter. Any sport, I think it has even, you know, for people that don't play it, it rises the hats of the nation to be following a team, and it's just so exciting.
It is, yeah. And you know, there's something, you know, there's thing nice about that whole collective thing, because people are divided, you know, Cork and Kerry, yeah. Causeway and Abbey Dorney, or yes. whatever, Stacks and Cairns O'Rahilly's. But when it comes to Ireland soccer, it's great that there's one thing that we all get united in.
A national identity, yes. isn't it? So yes. important.
So important, absolutely. Level. Well, anyway, we leave the soccer behind, because we're going to talk a little bit today about siblings as it pertains to the whole issue of parenting. And with apologies to anyone like myself who only has the one child and won't have these problems, a lot of people listening to us this afternoon who have children, who have are lucky enough to be parents, have more than one child. And there will always be problems when you have siblings, won't there? Because there'll always be one who feels they're not getting enough attention, and there'll be fights and all of that.
Yes. And I suppose I smile when sibling rivalry comes up as a subject matter, because it is normal. Everybody finds their own place in the pack, in the group, the family. The older has a few privileges, the younger one is a bit younger, but they learn so much from sibling rivalry. It's a lesson teacher in every area of life. Do you know, if you have older children, we can teach them how to help and support the younger children, help them to do a few tasks, few jobs. We can teach them empathy through the siblings. But they learn problem solving. They learn conflict resolution and negotiation skills. They learn to manage themselves. They learn to use a bit of assertive communication, and they learn actually when it's time to pause and step out of it. So there's a whole amount of skills in there. But when I was reading up a bit this now to freshen my thoughts about it, one that comes to my mind is they learn very early on how to suck the parents into the sibling rivalry. So it becomes not a sibling rivalry challenge or a problem between siblings, but actually they suck the parents in to try and manage it. And despite the fact that they learn so much from it, stuff that you can't get in academic books, parents hate it. It's just really annoying. And it can really disrupt the flow of the house. And I suppose sibling rivalry, we have three levels of it. If we go with the traffic light system, where we have the green level, where there's a bit of banter, there's over and back, there's a competition, there's the bit of push and shoving, there might be the odd physical battle, the odd name calling, you know, all that kind of stuff going on. We need to let it go. We need to let it go.
We as parents need to let it go.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's annoying more than anything else. The parents would say, I'm in the kitchen, and they're too vom at it. They're bickering and they're bantering and they're turning it on, and that is over and back, and my head is just melting. Whereas that's kind of a green light thing that we just let it go. It's like a referee doesn't blow for everything in a match. We have to let some of be free play as well, and let it go with the flow. But then if it's beginning to cross boundaries that violating our values in the family, that if you have, say, an older sibling, 14, fighting with a 6-year-old, now a bit of banter has to go on around that as well, but that's a big power difference in a relationship. So whereas you might get two teenagers or some, there'd be 2 years between them, 4 years between them, so their cognitive skills would be around the same levels, you know, how they think, how they act, how they problem solve would be around similar levels, so they're fighting with similar levels of ability, shall we say. But if we've older ones, then maybe not very nice to younger ones and things, we might need to intervene there and things. But we're keeping an eye on it. So if the amber light lights up to say, is this going past what is normal, what is acceptable? Do I need to step in here or don't I? Or we might have the red light one, where some of the children's behaviour towards siblings can be really violent and aggressive and quite nasty. So it's about, if it steps up to that level, then we really have to intervene and we have to work at that from a different level.
So what you seem to be saying, Margaret, is if you as a parent are always stepping in and trying to referee and putting one in one corner and one in the other and trying to sort it out, they'll never learn how to problem solve themselves and they'll miss out on a great life skill.
Absolutely, absolutely. So you could have two teenagers, just an example that I have come across, two teenagers actually call themselves horrible, vile names. They go over and back, the parent gets involved and they're told, you favour her, you're always taking her side, you're this side. Then a big row blows up between one of the children and the parent and all that kind of thing. Whereas the parent has learned to actually say, okay now lads, if you want to fight the bedroom or if you want to go on with that language, move out of here. This is my space. I want a bit of calm. Actually, the teenagers will batter each other with a few words and things, but it stops then. They forget about it. They're as thick as thieves two hours later. One's borrowing lipstick off the other and nail varnish and things, and the mother's still upset over the row she's had with the children. And so we need to, if we want children to learn to solve problems and things, we must step back a bit and let them at it. Now, if you've two children that are fighting, and it's not our job to actually figure out who's at fault, who's wrong, who's right. Our job is actually to say to them, lads, this has gone too far. Sit together, the two of you, and find a solution. When you have a solution to this, you'll have your television on. When you've a solution to this, come and tell me. So you're actually grounded at the table until you have a solution. Sometimes even saying to two teenagers, OK, both of you down to your bedrooms, figure out a solution together how you're going to sort this out, because we're not going to listen to it up here in the kitchen. We try and allow the young people sort it out. If we often have children coming from one room to the other to the parent, he hit me, she hit me, and that. Now, deep down, the parents probably know there's an instigator, but there's also a one that reacts to it, and it's usually the one that reacts, gets in the trouble and all that kind of thing. If we weren't in the room, the same as a referee, we can't referee it, we can't decide. It's not our job to figure out who was right or wrong. Our job would be to listen to each side of it. OK, you tell me your side using the I and me. I don't want you to talk about Jim at all. I want you to talk about me. I went into the sitting room, I sat down to watch television and he wouldn't give me the remote control, so I gave him a kick. We're asking him to talk about his part on it, to take responsibility. So every time he'd shift into, he said and he did this, we'd be saying, no, stick with the I and the me now, so I understand your part in it.
Yeah, Margaret, should you discourage your children from being the telltale, from being the one who's always whining to mammy, he was at me, she was at me?
Yeah, you see, we have to figure that one out, because we have the one that will come whining, but we also have the young one that might be blackguarded by a stronger sibling or all that kind of thing. But our job is to empower that young person to be able to manage it. So when she comes, OK, what happened? So tell me your part in it. So that young one again has to say, well, I was in the sitting room and he asked for such and such and I wouldn't give it to him, or whatever. And they might be in the absolute right that I was playing. He came in, shoved me out of it and took my toys and all that kind of thing. So we'd be saying to her, OK, if that happens again, how can you respond to him? How can you go back now and say to him, I'm sorry, that was my game. I was in the middle of playing with it. You need to let me finish my game. And when I finish in half an hour, I'll give it to you. We're trying to teach them not to come out to everyone fix their problems for them. They're going to school. They're highly intelligent. They're doing math sums, even addition, long division, all that. And yet we can't allow them solve a problem with a sibling, come up with a solution for it.
Gotcha. Margaret, we have to take a quick break, but there's an awful lot to dive into about the whole sibling thing, and we must talk a bit about sibling rivalry and comparing children when they start going to school as well to their brothers and their brothers' sisters. If anyone has a question for Margaret, by the way, 083 300 3300, to get in touch with us. Margaret Gilbert, parenting coach, is going to stay with us for another while, and we're back after these.
parenting advice on Talk About.
Now, Margaret Gilbert is with us. We're talking parenting. We're specifically talking siblings and the issues that can arise for parents when they have more than one child. Here's an interesting question that's come in for you, Margaret, on that. A caller says, I'm just wondering why an older sibling in their 50s would constantly criticise, nitpick and pass mark comments and snide remarks to another sibling in their late 40s. Now, that's not really a parenting question, but I suppose it does go back to the dynamics that were created when they were young.
Absolutely, absolutely. The dynamic when we're young goes with us for life if we don't do some personal development work. So you might find 10 in a family that when they all go back together, the same dynamic builds. The same, even that person now being the perpetrator of the negative comments and all that kind of thing, and that child being the recipient of them and all that kind of thing, that came from childhood and nothing has changed. When they go back in, they start straight away. But a person that might do personal development, just say the recipient there of the one that's at the negative end of it, if they go doing personal development, learn to stay outside the family dynamics, not to accept that kind of bullying behaviour from another member of the family and things. And you see, it's actually quite a hard thing to do because dynamics, people like things to stay the same, and when one person changes in the dynamic, the others, they can get ostracised from the family, kind of, because when you don't fit in, if you don't accept it, if you're calling it out. Now, some families are open to a lot of change, but other families aren't. They're very closed systems, and this is how it worked. It always worked. And if you're not happy with putting up with his behaviour, then, you know, we won't engage very much with you. So that person might wind up distancing themselves very much from their family, or just managing it at a low level that they might visit when that brother may not be there, if it's important to them to visit their parents or whatever. And it often goes back to, if it's not managed in a very young level. I suppose, you know, in this day and age and years ago, we've strong characters and families, and they do tend to do that kind of stuff to siblings if they get away with it. But sometimes it's very hard to parent them, and parents kind of may turn a blind eye to it because they may not have been able to manage it. But I mean, that to me as a child is a red basket behaviour, a red light behaviour, that if they're being really derogatory, nasty to another sibling in the house, it has to be addressed.
It has to be called out.
It has to be called out. Absolutely.
In a non-confrontational manner.
A calm, regulated, problem-solving manner.
Margaret, what kind of things do parents do that can cause problems, you know, for the dynamic between siblings? Because just two things I'm thinking off the top of my head. Rightly or wrongly, when there's more than one child in the family, children often have a perception of your dad's favourite or your mom's favourite. And there's that. And then there's the comparison, like, I can't believe you were bad at maths now because your sister was great at maths. You know those kind of things.
Yes, yes. Well, they're very much coming from the old way of being. And I would hope that we have moved on a good bit from that kind of stuff, you know, saying those things to children. But I can still remember it myself at school, getting a slap of a book and saying, your sister could do them and why can't you? And my sister would say she got a slap as well and told the same for the sister above her. We were all the steps of the stairs. But one thing anyway, children know how to trigger parents to get stuck in their sibling rivalry and all that. So the first thing they throw out is, she's your favourite, why not give her everything? You give it to her anyway, you're always looking after her. Why am I always the one that's being picked on or what have you? So we need to be able to, that often triggers a huge amount of guilt in parents. So then they're saying, oh my God, am I favouring him or am I? And they're all up in a heap then. So we need to watch when it's thrown out by a child. If it's thrown out anytime there's a row to get him out of trouble, if it's thrown out anytime they're asked to do something, why don't you ask him? A lot of the time we need to be saying to the young person, I'm dealing with you right here. I'm chatting with you. I'm not talking about how much time I spend with any of the others in the family. But sometimes in families where you've one child. We have one in every family that has high energy. They might have a neurodiverse condition or something. So they're always being told, don't do this, don't do that, don't do the other. So they're all the time, their behaviour being micromanaged. And therefore, then we might have some children in the house that present with very little difficulties. So they're good child, well done, that was great, or that's marvellous. So then you have a child, you've one that's always getting this praise, good girl, well done. That's as damaging to a child as one never getting a bit of praise. So the other person automatically perceives themselves as being bad, because nobody's saying they're good to them, but they're being called out and everything. So we might as well shout over to them, you're bad, because that's what they're internalising. So we just have to be very mindful with our children that if we have a child that behaves really, really well, praise the behaviours, not good girl, good boy, because that creates a sense in a child then that they can never do make a mistake, they can't do wrong, they wouldn't like mum or dad to be disappointed in them. So they, it can help them to develop very high expectations of themselves. So it would be, I loved the way you sat down and spent 2 hours this year, your maths there tonight, they were difficult. Loved the way you pushed through them. I know you were exhausted tonight, but you still kept trying. You know, I loved the way you go out there, even though there was a row at school last week, you still went out with your friends and you still, so we're praising the effort. If a young person helps us bring in the shopping from the car, we say, thank you for bringing in the shopping. I really appreciate it. We've a lot of children that feel very unappreciated now, both at home and in school is what they would say. So even saying, we don't have to be grovelling to children. There is an expectation that they have to take part as a team. A family is a team and everybody has to play a part in that, in the tasks and the jobs and everything. But every now and then you say, I really appreciate it when you helped me out today. I really appreciate it when it came from the shop and I was exhausted. And when you came out, it lit up my night. Do you know, so...
Rather than saying, good girl for good doing that. Girl, yeah. And I suppose the child who's challenging, the child who's always in trouble and... Like, they're the ones who probably need the praise more than anyone.
Yes. And again, it's about picking out, deliberately picking out some of the good things that they do. They're high energy lads. It's difficult to work with at times, but it's a lovely energy. We don't have to suppress it. We need to pick two or three behaviours that are unacceptable and kind of work on them and ignore a whole lot of other stuff so that young person isn't always being told, don't do this, don't do that. Oh my God, what did you say that for? So that young person needs, Jesus, you know, school is tough for you, but you go every day. Fair play to you.
Fair play.
Fair play to you.
A couple of questions for you. I know some of these are related to the topic, others aren't. We have a grandmother who has a 2-year-old who's always biting. Any advice on how to stop this would be a great help.
Yeah, well, I suppose biting is one of the big challenges for children, because it is a difficult one to stop.
It's common enough, isn't it?
It is, yeah. It is, it's common enough. But I suppose, you know, if she's 2, she could still have kind of teeth coming through and all that kind of thing. Has she an alternative? You get loads of chewies and things now in the special education stores and things that she might chew instead of biting, which might just help. But when she does bite someone or something, it means attention must be stopped straight away. So if she's on your lap and she bites, then she must be placed on the floor and no biting. No biting, absolutely. So we take away our attention from it. But give it a couple of minutes and we just come back to it again. We connect with the child, we play with the child, we do things. But there has to be a kind of an immediate consequence to it of no attention for it. Because if it's attention seeking, that will resolve it. Now, if we have a young child like that in a creche or a preschool, now she'd be too young for preschool, but they need one-on-one support to make sure they don't get in to bite other children, because it can happen very fast. But the other things we need to kind of look at as well then are the ABCs of the behaviour. What's going on for the child right before she bites? Now, if it's an oral motor thing that she just likes the slight biting and that kind of thing, it could come out of any time, any place. But it might be if it's attention seeking or if it's, you know... trying to engage. Sometimes it can be to engage someone in play, not realising it hurts, do you know, that kind of way. So we're trying to figure out what is the child, what is going on around the child right before they bite. So is there any little trigger? It might be child taking their tie, it might be wanting a tie, it might be attention seeking, or you might find that Nana's going to work with another child and the bite could happen right then. So we're trying to figure out what happens right before it to try and get the trigger. And then we're looking at the behaviours, the biting, and we're looking at the consequence then. Sometimes the consequence reinforces the behaviour, so we want to make sure it doesn't reinforce it. And that is trying to extinguish it rather than, you know, the way if it's attention they want and they get loads of attention for it, then that's going to reinforce it. So it's biting is one of the difficult ones.
Just one more, Margaret, I can't believe we're out of time already. This particular slot flew. But a listener says that she regularly minds her relatives' teenage children, and she said they can be terribly moody now that they've become teenagers. Is this a teen thing or could it be something else?
Yeah, you've a bit of both, right? Teenagers do get moody, but I think our teenagers have got quite rude and sometimes thinks the world revolves around them. So we need to look at, are they violating basic rules like saying hello, meeting and greeting you? Do you know, if you pick up a young person in a car, nieces and nephews or whatever, there's an expectation that they say hello to you.
At the very least,
there's an expectation that if they sit at the dinner table that they put down the phone so that they can talk to us. It's okay to have moods. That's okay. All emotions are normal, but we need to manage them. But we still need to have politeness. We still need to have manners. If somebody's cooking you a dinner or you're meeting a greeting, there's an expectation you put down your phone, that you eat with the family. You know, so they can have their moods. They can have them, but there's still expectations that they're respectful to the people that are caring for them and that are connected around them. You know, just because you're upset and angry and mad doesn't mean to say you can treat somebody else quite rudely over that.
Exactly. Margot, we've got to go, unfortunately, but great topic today and great information given out. And remind people how they can touch base with you.
Yeah, Margaret Gilbert, lifecoaching.com on the internet, or 087 174 7813.
Great, and you might leave your number with Brenda, who's on the phones today.
Lovely, thanks.
If anyone rings up. Great to see you, and we'll see you one more time before the end of the year. We'll have a Christmas special with Margaret.
A Santa special. Absolutely.
Something to look forward to. Thanks a million.
Thanks
to
a lot,
Margaret Gilbert, life coach and parenting coach, joining us for this month's parenting slot. We'll take a break, folks. More guests in studio to meet after these.